You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to The Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 51. So, a lot of things to go through for this week. Not too much as far as the news goes, so I'll go right through that, and then I'll jump into an app/feature review. This will be more on the Android side, so actually it's only on the Android side, so there is that. And then in the entertainment segment, there will be a movie review and two trailer reviews, so there is that as well, so look out for that. So with that, I'll jump right into this week's theme, or start it off with this week's theme, which is the indifference curve. So, the theoretical wordy definition of it is that it is a series of combinations between two different economic goods for which an individual is indifferent in the combination received. So, basically what that means is that if you're given the option to purchase two things in various quantities, anything underneath this curve, you're happy in getting that combination. So, let's say you have $50, and for $50 you can get five toothbrushes for $50, or you can get five tubes of toothpaste for $50. But you need to buy both, so within that curve you can get a combination of two brushes and three tubes of toothpaste, three tubes of toothpaste and two toothbrushes, one toothbrush, four tubes of toothpaste, vice versa, anything like that. So it's that combination that falls within that curve. Essentially, it's something that you're happy with buying. It's something you're comfortable with, whether it's a need or just a plain desire. Maybe based on your history, you realize that you go through a lot of tubes of toothpaste, but not too many toothbrushes. So, you know, you need to buy more one, less of the other. But essentially, an indifference curve is just a plotting of what... it was basically a graph showing what is a good combination of goods to buy. And then anything outside of that curve makes it either is too expensive for those two options, or it's not in your budget, or for whatever reason, anything outside of that curve is something that you're not happy with buying because it's, for whatever reason, it's too many quantities, price, time intensive, whatever you're, depending on what you're comparing, it is outside of your affordability range. The indifference curve is a theory used in microeconomics to show customer preferences and limitations in budgets. So maybe your budget is a certain amount of money, or maybe it's a certain amount of time. So you need to basically figure out over time what you need, what you don't need, how much of something you need at any given time. So you want to you factor that into your decisions, so you know how much you can buy, how much you can't buy, and go from there. The limitation of the graph is that it does only show two items at a time, so you do have your x and y axis and a curve. So there are slight ways of trickery to get around that. So maybe you realize that for a certain amount of money you can always buy five units of something, so you can always buy two, or you're always going to be buying, let's say, two toothbrushes and three tubes of toothpaste. So all of a sudden your y-axis can be that, while you can do factors of that, and then your x-axis is maybe so many gallons of gas in your car, or let's say so many fruits or so much bread or whatever you want your comparison to be, and then you figure out your factors that way. But you do need to make sure that you're comparing the same thing, so apples and apples, oranges to oranges, that kind of thing. So if you're looking at one bread and another combination of thing, you still need to be looking at quantities versus comparisons in price. So with that being said, I will jump right into this week's tech news. So for those of you Android users who've been using Android for several years, you may know the name ADW Launcher. It's a third-party launcher that's been around, I want to say, since around the Cupcake days. Definitely the Froyo days of Android, so Android 2.0, 2.1, something like that. So it was a replacement launcher where you could change the number of home screens, change the way your app drawer works, get shortcuts, and all of that. Well, this week it was updated to version 2. It was released as a beta into Google Play, so it has a number of speed improvements, how you interact with your widgets and your home page screens and dock and all of that stuff. So it works a lot better with newer Android devices. So definitely check that out. I did play with it for a while. So if you want the original Android, or I will say original quotes because it's the first one I use. It was eventually built into CyanogenMod. So there is that, but it got an update, and if you want to play around with the original Android custom launcher, then definitely give it a shot. Join the beta program, play around with it for a little bit. I would say that Nova Launcher is similar, except it's a newer version of a similar kind of custom launcher, but a little bit newer build for Android 4 and up. ADW Launcher does go back some time, so overall a good launcher and worth playing around with. This week, Google added the ability to search for symptoms via Google Search. So if you want to find potential causes or find more information about your various symptoms, you can do a search for it. It does come with a disclaimer that it's meant for informational purposes and not to replace a doctor or provide any sort of medical information. It's just to help you maybe figure out what's going on at a glance and get some more information or research from there. Twitter updated its video service to allow posting 140-second videos. So if you always want post longer videos, you can now do that. Microsoft this week released a Microsoft wallet for the Lumia 650, 950, and 950 XL for mobile payments. So if you have one of those three devices, then you can now do that. Google turned on two-step authentication for Google Apps users. So if you're a Google Apps user and wanted more security on your account, you can now do that. Android Auto got a podcast section this week via Google Play Music. So if you do have an Android Auto device, then you now have the podcast option. Audible for Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile is getting an update to add podcasts and short-form shows. So if you wanted to use Audible as your podcast client, you can now do that as well. And finally, Instagram is going to start adding in-app translation to all of its mobile apps. So if you follow people who submit posts in different languages, you'll soon be able to easily automatically translate those posts. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's app/feature review. So for this week, I wanted to show how you can use your Android tablet as a second monitor. It is something that is easily adjustable in Android via a third-party app. I'm not sure if you can turn off the screen timeout for iPads and Kindle Fires and things like that, and Microsoft Surfaces. With Kindle Fires, I'm sure if you root the device or get Google Play installed, you can do it. But as far as what I'm proposing, it's an Android-only thing unless you can turn off the screen timeout for non-Android tablets. So the first thing you're going to do is install an app called Tasker. It does cost $2.99 and is spelled T-A-S-K-E-R. It does provide a number of features to customize how you interact with your device, but this particular thing will only use Tasker to talk to your device's timeout settings. So the first thing you're going to do is create a new task. So you'll go to the task tab, hit the plus sign, and you can name it anything you want. In my example, I called it screen on just so I know that that's what I'm going to be doing. Then you'll hit the plus check mark and then hit plus again, and you'll go do a search for display timeout or go to display and select display timeout. And then you'll be presented with a series of options in categories called seconds, minutes, and hours. What you'll do is set everything to maximum. So for seconds and minutes, you'll set it to 59. For hours, you'll set it to 23. Essentially, by setting it this high, you're setting it to indefinite. So basically, your screen will now never time out anytime this task is run. So now what you'll need to do, you have a task set up, but it's not going to do anything because Tasker doesn't know when to run it. So what you'll do is twofold, or not really twofold, but there's a couple of different instances you may need to keep your screen enabled. The first is when you're connected to Wi-Fi. So anytime you're connected to any Wi-Fi connection, your screen will stay enabled. So what you'll do is you'll go to the profile tab, you'll add the plus sign and select state, and then you'll go to net and then select Wi-Fi connected. So anytime you're connected to a Wi-Fi or you have a Wi-Fi connection, your you'll select the you'll be able to set when that your screen stays on. You can select specific Wi-Fi connections to connect to, so that way, let's say you only want your screen to stay on while you're at home or at work or in this particular location, you can select it from the Wi-Fi connection screen by hitting the magnifying glass icon. So that way, when you're at home or work or wherever, it'll only keep your screen on then. So once you selected that, you'll go back and it'll ask you to select a task to run. So you'll select the task that you created in the first step. So in this case, screen on. So that way, now anytime your tablet is connected to Wi-Fi and unlocked, then your screen will stay on. So the use case here for me is that I always keep my tablet on my desk to use for listening to Pandora, Pocket Cast, maybe looking at documents I'm looking at. I just want a second screen for maybe even videos I'm watching on YouTube, Amazon Video. Or I want to look at extra information on the side while I'm doing something on my laptop. So now this becomes a second monitor. It stands on its own. It's not connected to my laptop, so it's kind of annoying to switch, have it sent from one to another. But if I'm looking at a web page, then I can always share it via email or push bullet or anything like that and move the page between the two devices that way. The other use case is rather than selecting the Wi-Fi connection, you can also select Bluetooth connection. So when you're going through the same step of creating a profile, going to net, and instead of selecting Wi-Fi connected, you'll select Bluetooth connected. So anytime you're connected to a Bluetooth connection, your screen will stay on. So you can do the same thing here by selecting specific Bluetooth connections, so it only works on certain connections rather than all of them. So let's say you want to use your tablet as a as a navigation device in your car, or you want to create your own pseudo Android Auto thing in your car, then you can do that. So anytime you're connected to a Bluetooth connection in your car, or if you don't have Bluetooth and you use your phone as a hotspot, then anytime your tablet is connected to your phone's hotspot, then the screen will stay on, so you know that your hotspot is only turned on when you're in your car, so that way your tablet always stays on. And it doesn't time out, and you don't have to worry about losing your directions or your screen timing out and you're in the middle of, let's say, a chat conversation or something like that. Hopefully you're not driving at that time, but if you just need your screen to stay on, or if you're not necessarily using navigation but you have your maps open and you don't want the screen to turn off, then having it on, having your screen not time out, is the definite plus. And then you can use it for various other things that you may need for keeping your screen off for whatever reason. So let's say you're always, your tablet's on your desk and you want to keep it on for a conversation you're having, because let's say you use your tablet for a Hangouts conversation, WhatsApp conversation, Facebook Messenger, anything like that, then you can keep your screen on while you're at your desk, so you don't have to keep unlocking it every 5 minutes, 10 minutes, hour, or whatever your screen's timeout may be. And it saves you that much time of having to unlock your screen every time. And then for me, the other benefit is to do the same thing on my smartphone. So if you do have an Android smartphone, you can use the same steps to do it here. So if you have your phone mounted to a car mount, you can keep your screen on. So for me, I can easily see at a glance that I have, when I have a new notification, so I know if it's a WhatsApp message, email, Facebook message, Instagram like, or anything like that. So if you have any questions, comments, or anything like that, and you want me to maybe help you walk it through it or try something else out for maybe your personal use case, you can always reach out to me by email or DM on Twitter. And then, as always, I'll have a link in the show notes to the video version so you can see the walkthrough. That way is how I did it on my own tablet. So that's all there is for that show. After the short break, I'll jump into this week's entertainment segment. And welcome back to the episode, everybody. A lot of stuff to go through for this week's entertainment segment, so I'll jump right into it. Got the usual news and what I watched. Then I'll have a film review, two new trailers that were released of note, and then I'll round it out with the Star Wars profile. So to start it off with the news, Star Wars Rogue One is confirmed to be starring Darth Vader. So in case you've been wondering about that, that has been confirmed. So we'll see how the Dark Lord of the Sith plays into this particular film. And finally, the official Ghostbusters reboot theme song was released this week. It's a collaboration between Fall Out Boy and Missy Elliott, so look out for that. I didn't find anything special about it. It's basically a rock version of the song, basically making it a little bit more modern. So that's about it for that. As far as what I watched, I had a chance to continue watching Game of Thrones. It was season 6, episode 9, Battle of the Bastards, and it worked. It turned out actually how I kind of wanted it to, so in case you haven't seen it, I won't spoil it, but I did like the battle, I liked the backup that arrived and all of that, so definitely worth a watch. I also had a chance to watch Preacher season 1, episode 4, Monster Swamp. Basically, it was more about the vampire guy and his trying to protect the preacher and how he's working with those angel government guys. So, a little bit of progress there. And then also how the criminal lady is factoring in as far as how she's trying to reintegrate into society. I also had a chance to finish watching Mr. Robot Season 1, so I'm all caught up ahead of Season 2's coming in July. And overall, I thought it was actually a pretty good season. It was worth all the hype that I had heard about it, so in case you want to check it out. As far as the kind of vibe I got from it, it was kind of like Hackers meets Memento. So it's basically from the point of view of the main hacker guy, Elliot. And I think it kind of worked because he did break the fourth wall as far as what his thought process was going into it. So I do recommend watching it. I did enjoy it. So if you have Amazon Prime, it's available there at the moment for via streaming. And then I also had a chance to watch Now You See Me. So basically a magician movie. It was very had a lot of showmanship and all that. It had a little bit of the misdirection. That's the basic premise of it. I kind of liked that the magicians were talking you through who the characters were and what they were doing and kind of hinting at what was going on. For me, I kind of preferred the Prestige a little bit more. I'm not sure why, though. I might go back and rewatch that just to see why I like that one a little bit more. But this was actually done very well, so I do recommend watching it. But I also don't know how much of this movie we'll need to know going into the sequel, Now You See Me 2. But I figure I'd watch it in case I do get a chance to watch the sequel in the theaters, and I do recommend it. I'd probably give it maybe a 75%. It was worth it. I kind of didn't like the main reveal at the end. Not necessarily because I didn't see it coming, but just because it didn't seem like it played well overall, unless they kind of resolve it in the sequel, so we'll see what happens there. So that's all there is for that, so with that, I'll jump into this week's film review, and in this case, I had a chance to watch Warcraft, so I thought I'd do my review. So the movie itself released in the United States on June 10th, 2016. It has a runtime of 123 minutes. So not too long, not too short, just right around 2 hours. So they didn't go overboard with it. Probably about 80%, 85% of the way through it, I was thinking that either they're going to pack a lot into the next like 30 to 40 minutes, not really knowing how long it had been, or they're going to be wrapping it up really soon. So a summary of the movie is: the peaceful realm of Azeroth stands on the brink of war as its civilization faces a fearsome race of invaders, orc warriors fleeing their dying home to colonize another. As a portal opens to connect the two worlds, one army faces destruction and the other faces extinction. From opposing sides, two heroes are set on a collision course that will decide the fate of their family, their people, and their home. It has an IMDb rating, as of the last time I checked, of 76%. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 29% critics rating and 82% audience rating. So the biggest thing I could figure as far as why there's that big difference is that it's a video game movie, is based on the Warcraft franchise. And basically, it's because it's a video game movie, I have a feeling that critics didn't like it. But if you're a fan of the game or you play the game, you're going to like it a lot more. As far as me going in, all I really knew about the game is that there's a place called Azeroth that's really important. Maybe it's a city or a planet. Orcs and humans are in some side of, in some sort of war. I'm not sure if it's like a hate war or feud war or something like that. I just know from what I picked up over the years that they're fighting. There's a guy called the Lich King who actually does not play into this particular movie, but he's not Lichy Magnate. That's honestly the first thing that came to mind, but he's some sort of Ice King from doing further research, but he's not in the movie, so not a factor. And then there's also a region of fighting pandas who actually don't also play, who do not play a factor in this movie as of yet, but the way it ended, the movie ended, I figure there will be sequels where the expansion packs and World of Warcraft play more into the lore of the movie. So basically, I went in knowing very little, but I did go in thinking, assuming that it is a video game movie. So that is of note. There are factions. It is a massively multiplayer online role playing game. So there is leveling up. So I kind of want to see how they figured that. The story, I figure it would be tough because it is highly dependent on leveling up different levels of characters, so we'll see where they go with that. So with that, I'll jump into the review. So to start it off, a Viking, a preacher, and an inhuman walk into a bar. So this movie is of note because I was looking up the cast before I started watching the movie, and it turns out the guy who plays Ragnar Lothbrok in the, I think History Channel or AMC, I forget which one, the TV series for Vikings, the guy who plays Ragnar Lothbrok plays the human warrior in this movie. I forget his name offhand. Durotan, I think, but I'm not 100% sure. Not Durotan, but the other guy, the main human warrior guy in the movie is played by Ragnar Lothbrok. The guy who plays Preacher in the AMC TV series I think he plays the king in this movie, the human king. And then we also have Ruth Negga, the inhuman from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., playing, I want to say, some sort of human queen or highborn lady in Warcraft. So we have three known people here. There was also Daniel Wu from Into the Badlands playing one of the orcs. I actually couldn't tell which one he was. But looking at the cast list, I think he was a guy who played the main orc, mystic guy, Gul'dan, something like Gul'dan, something like that. He played the main preacher guy, but I couldn't honestly say offhand. Next up, though, I wanted to say, I had the thought during the movie, does Lane always pay his debt? So Lane was a king guy, and I know why I thought this, because he had the armor with the lion-looking thing and all that, but also throughout the movie, I had the sneaking suspicion that the movie sounded a lot like the music from Game of Thrones. So doing some research after, I found out that that was actually the case. The guy who does the music for Game of Thrones did the music for Warcraft, so I could have honestly sworn a couple of times throughout the movie that I heard the Reigns of Castamere for some, like it sounded very, very similar. So I got to thinking about Lannisters always paying their debts and how the king's armor looked a lot like lions. Next up, he who controls the orcs controls the wolves. So I got, just since I made the connection there about Game of Thrones, the wolves that the orcs ride on seemed a lot like direwolves. And so it was interesting that when the I think it was a human warrior guy had his sword to the orc's throat, the wolf basically calmed down and ran away. So basically, if the humans wanted to stop the orc's ability to ride wolves, just hold swords to their throats. Rule of thumb for any dark portal: climb the steps to see what happens. So we have the new mage guy, or the new mystic guy learning his powers, and he goes to the council of good guys. I'm not sure who those elder mystic guys were, but I don't know. And then, but the thing that bugged me here is that he didn't, there was no real reason for him to walk into the cube. I couldn't figure why, what was drawing him to the power, or even if he said, I would have probably preferred that he's being drawn to it. But the way he said it kind of bugged me that there's no reason for him to be drawn to that portal. So what caused him to be, want to walk into it aside from the fact that he wanted to do it and see what happens? So I figured any rule of thumb, if you can walk into a portal, walk into it and see what happens. Don't worry about the consequences. And finally, if the new mage is already helping out, why not corrupt him first so that you have a guy on your side who'll create the protective barrier so no one will interrupt? So the thing that bugged me for the movie was, or the biggest thing that bugged me was that the new mage guy seemed, if he was kicked out of the order, then something was obviously up. I kind of wanted, or he walked away from the order, I think, if I remember right him saying at some point, but he's no longer in that order of mystics. So if he has this ability to create a protective barrier, to me that would have seemed like something useful, especially since the head mage guy who's protecting the humans wants to focus on his on the dark powers. I think Fel, they called it, F-E-L-L or F-E-L. So if he can create a protective barrier, doesn't that make, to me that would have seemed like a good guy to have on your side to create that barrier so you can focus on your magic. And maybe he doesn't get corrupted, maybe he does, but if he doesn't have the power to control it, why not bring him to your side, kind of like the whole Emperor Palpatine, Darth Vader scenario? Like, corrupt him early to bring him on your side, and that way you have a guy who can kind of be your backup, create those barriers and do the spells to protect you while you're performing your magic, and go from there. So basically overall, the movie I thought was decent. The pacing was all right. I wasn't really bored at any time throughout the movie. It didn't seem like it finished too soon. It didn't finish too late. I liked that the portal that they were building, I saw that direct comparison to the image artwork for Warcraft itself. I kind of wanted to see more about the leveling up. I kind of saw that in the whole mage thing where his powers grew. Not really much in the orc side of things. I'm not sure if there's that leveling up thing on that side. I assume there is. What I gathered on the orc side was that there are different levels of people. There's a hierarchy more in their society. So you have the orc priest, you have the war chief, war captain guy. You have the different clans with the different size orcs. I assume size matters in this case, but I really couldn't tell. I mean, it seemed like orcs all in general all had the same amount of power, unless you're the mystic who can draw upon the energy and control other orcs, but that was about it. As far as the humans go, similar thing where you kind of have a military hierarchy, so you have the king, you have the head, or the main warrior who has all the powers. He sees things ahead of, or he can analyze things quickly. We have his son, who's still in the lower ranks, doesn't understand things, but learns quickly. So that, I don't know, that's kind of weird. I kind of wanted to see more about that. So we'll see if they do any sequels that, or if they do have sequels to the movie to account for the expansions and all of that. Are they going to have that leveling up or changing of characters or more about the other lore from the movie? So overall, I give it up maybe about 70-80%. It was pretty good. It was another video game movie. Since I didn't play it, since I don't play the game at all, I've never played it. It probably doesn't, it doesn't really have that connection with me. But overall, I thought it was good. It did remind me a lot of Lord of the Rings. So if it came out before then, but it had the same production quality, I probably would have liked it a little bit more, but it did. To me, it seemed like there was better character development in Lord of the Rings, but at this point, we do have the trilogy of Lord of the Rings. We have a trilogy of The Hobbit, so we'll see over time if they improve upon Warcraft. I do remembering thinking in Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, that it was pretty good, but I kind of wanted to see more, and I'm probably on par here as well, so I do recommend watching it if you're a fan of video games. If you are not, then you might not be that great of a movie. The story's iffy. You can sort of figure it out going in, but I do recommend reading a little bit more if you want to learn more. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll go jump right into the first trailer overview, and it's the teaser trailer for a new show coming to HBO called Westworld. The trailer was released on June 20th, 2016. It's about a minute and a half long. The show is a science fiction western thriller based on the 1973 film of the same name, Westworld, which was originally directed by Michael Crichton. It said the premise of the show is going to be about the same as the movie, where amusement park robots malfunction and begin killing the visitors. The HBO summary is that discover a world where every human appetite can be indulged. So essentially, what the show, from what I can gather, is you have an amusement park with different themes, kind of like Disneyland. So you have a Western world, which I assume is going to be the premise of it, and other worlds based on various themes. So androids are created based on the theme. So they, when you're in the Western world, you have gunslingers and the saloons and prostitutes and all of that, and they act accordingly. But the robots begin to break down and turn on their humans. So from what I gather, the show's going to be kind of like a mix between Blade Runner and Total Recall. So it's like that dystopian future, but set in a Western world with futuristic elements. And then what happens when the robots go, not necessarily turn, but in this case, break down. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what, how they go with the show and how they produce it. I mean, overall, it seems pretty good. It's also, I want to say it's kind of, not necessarily iRobot, but what happens when you try to mask people from the truth. So it's kind of like the storyline of Total Recall, but the premise and backstory of Blade Runner. So definitely a show that looks to be very interesting, especially if they produce it along the lines of Deadwood or Game of Thrones. So the show is going to release in October of 2016. The trailer is up on YouTube, so definitely worth a watch. The other trailer of note for this week is Inferno. So in case you're a fan of the Dan Brown books, or you're a fan of Robert Langdon, the character in the books and movies for The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, this book, or Inferno, is the third book in the trilogy, or the third novel in the trilogy of novels by Dan Brown featuring Robert Langdon. So this movie is the third in the trilogy of movies. The trailer released on June 23rd. It has a runtime of about 2.5 minutes. A summary of the movie, and more or less a book, is when Robert Langdon wakes up in an Italian hospital with amnesia, he teams up with Dr. Sienna Brooks, and together they must race across Europe against the clock to foil a deadly global plot. So, essentially, we have, I want to say it's another secret organization who plans to destroy human civilization, but based on Dante's levels of hell. I want to say 7, maybe 13 levels. I forget offhand, but this is the mythology and symbology that's going to play into this movie as far as the poems and writings of Dante and his version of hell. So that's kind of the background there. So in case you haven't read the novel, that's kind of the way to look at it. So I'm kind of intrigued if they produce the movies as well as they did The Da Vinci Code and Angels of Demons. It should be just as good. I believe it's still being directed and produced by Ron Howard. Robert Langdon is still playing, or Tom Hanks is still playing Robert Langdon. Dr. Sienna Brooks is being played by Felicity Jones. And then the rest of the characters, I need to look up and review the story just so I can refresh my memory there. But so far the trailer looks very interesting. The movie looks interesting as well, so I can't wait to see the movie. And I didn't actually look up when the movie's releasing. I think it's still coming out in 2016, so look out for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile, and in this case it is Sith lightning. So this just hit me when I watched Warcraft. There was a wall of lightning that was released by the head mage guy in Warcraft, so I thought I would talk about the Sith lightning. So essentially, it is a purely offensive and energy-based attack that is traditionally used by dark side users of the Force or the Sith. The Force energy is channeled through the user's arms to release lightning bolts using their fingertips or the palms of their hands. It could be redirected by an opposing Force user, usually someone on the light side of the Force, if they're sufficiently powerful in the Force. So we saw this being done by Yoda twice against Dooku and Palpatine. And we saw Obi-Wan Kenobi block it with his lightsaber, with his reflexes. So if you knew about it, you could deflect it. We didn't see Luke Skywalker do that because he did not know this was a power of the Force. It did have long-term effects, so continuous use of lightning did have physical deformations that we saw in Palpatine. A victim did require bed rest if they survived the encounter due to the effects of the lightning on the user's nervous system and bones, caused the user to have brittle bones. So Luke Skywalker did have days of bed rest in order to recover from the injuries. It was a weird miracle that he did not, or his bones and body didn't collapse from the weight of carrying Vader in his suit, but it's probably he was fueled by the Force as well, I'm assuming. In order to use the Sith lightning, you do need a living conduit to channel the energy properly, so that's why we do see Palpatine being able to use it. And then, for example, I think Darth Bane was able to use it and various other users. There are many variations that and levels of Sith lightning that are available based on the intensity used and the ability and the level of the user. So there is chain lightning, so where you can affect multiple individuals at the same time. There's also a Force Storm, which is a more intense version of the lightning. And then Shock, which is a lighter version. So if you want to shock somebody, you have a light version there. So if you're not too powerful in the Force, or you haven't progressed this power sufficiently yet, it'll be along the lines of Shock, Lightning, Storm, or Chain Lightning. The lightning could be used by Jedi and otherwise light side Force user if they had a strong will and character, if they were able to control themselves. But it was generally frowned upon by the Jedi Council because it did skirt the difference between the light side and the dark side of the Force. There is something called the Vader's variant of the light, of the Sith lightning, where since he is unable to summon it directly from his body because it would interfere with his suit's performance and cause his suit to fail, he would be summon the Force lightning directly above his opponent by interacting with the atmosphere itself and then directing the lightning via the Force to the user. So we did not get to see this anywhere in the films or in the Clone Wars or any other media, so I can't actually verify that, but it would be cool to kind of see that happening, where he drew lightning from the atmosphere and directed it to his opponents. So that's all there is for that. So after the short break, I will jump into this week's relaxing segment. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you in a couple of great and exciting ways. So if you want to help expand the show and the network, we do have a couple of Patreons set up to help you support the show and the network in whatever way you can. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to see more posts on the feed. You want to have an Android app to quickly and easily get to the post and via different categories and things like that. Let's say you want to have a Q&A segment. Then be sure to visit patreon.com/patelN01 to check out the various patron levels and what kind of things you can unlock by helping to support the show. You can also help support the network by visiting patreon.com/geekio. This helps our flagship show go ad-free. So let's say you just want to blaze through the show, listen to all of it uninterrupted. You can do things like that. Let's say you wanted a weekly D&D episode. Helping to contribute to the Geek.io Patreon can help do that as well as adding special patron content, adding a new show, getting more con coverage, all of the great geeky, nerdy stuff that we all love. So that's patreon.com/geekio for all of that good stuff, as well as patreon.com/patelN01 to help the show expand as well. But that is all for that, so back to the show. So for this week's relaxing segment, I wanted to talk about how I enjoy going to a museum. So a few weeks ago, I had a chance to visit the Getty Villa. It is a home that was turned into a museum by its owner. I forget the guy's name, first name, but Getty is the last name. In this case, he turned his home into a Roman-style villa. So you have big lakes, open views, rooms and bedrooms and floors and decorations all set up in the style of a traditional Roman villa. Based on a reconstruction that was done using the blueprints from a villa that was built near the volcano at Pompeii and has only been partially recovered, so it was actually pretty interesting. I do like museums because I do enjoy learning about history, what's happened in our past, the achievements and accomplishments that were done at the time using the technology of the time, and how something new was done to or done created to do something differently. You also get to learn about the fashions and beauty of the time. So in a Roman villa, it was done very openly, so you get breezes, light, natural light, and done to kind of create levels of status in your home. So something I learned at the Getty Villa was that when you were at dinner, depending on where you were facing, determine what the owner of the house thought of you. So if you're facing towards the opening and the pool and the views of the home, you're considered more higher or closer to the owner of the home. If you're facing in the other direction, you're still a friend, but not as good of a friend because you're worth being in that person's home, but not facing the beautiful openings. You can see the owner's house, so you're kind of not as higher up as close or not as useful to the owner of that house as that owner might think. So when I go to a museum, so whether it's a Getty Villa, the Getty Museum, maybe you live in Paris and you can visit the Louvre, it's basically a way to look at where we've been, what we've done, what was done at the time, what we thought was art, what we thought was beauty, what was used to create something to show how people interacted and lived at the time. So I just find something interesting and relaxing about that. So while we can do a lot of stuff online nowadays, sometimes I do like to read a lot on Wikipedia or just online in general, but sometimes it does help to go to a museum itself and see what things look like in real life and just learn about it, read about it, see how things were created, learn about histories of the people, what might have been, what was, how things actually were and why they were done a particular way, and to think about how they differ from how we do things now and how things are actually different from between now and things many, many years ago. So that's actually all for this particular episode of Life of an Accounting Droid. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. You can find all related links and past episodes at PatelN01.com. You can find this show or any show on the Geek.io network at geek-io.net. And next week's episode, episode 52, will mark the end of the first year of Life of an Accounting Droid. So I'm not sure if I'm going to have anything special planned. At the moment, it's just going to be a regular episode. So if something comes up, I'll do something special for the episode or something unique or different or anything like that. But shortly after the episode releases, there will be a state of the podcast. So things that are updating, changing, things that have been added, and things to kind of make the episode or the show run a little bit more smoothly and make it a little bit more unique. So look out for that. There will be a video version and then also an audio version on the feed probably early the week after, so the week of July 4th. I'm currently planning to have it done by Monday, July 4th, but if not then maybe by Tuesday at the latest. So that's all there is for that. So if you have any questions, comments, anything like that, feedback, you can always leave a review on iTunes. 5 stars is always helpful to help us go higher in the ranks. thumbs up on Google Play Music, or just send an email or DM me on Twitter, share the post from Facebook, Google Plus, or Twitter, or anything like that. So that's all there is for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.